Welcome to The Art Of, a multimedia docu-like series comprised of episodes that translate our journey of a deeper dive into understanding the vast world of creatives here in Cincinnati through conversations, visuals, and music. I, your host Deuces, creator and founder of this series, will be taking you on an immersive experience through Cincinnati's culture of creativity. At the end of each episode, we will present to you every platform and outlet you can tap into to check out this immersive experience and through other unique ways as well. Also, stay tuned to the end as we will be showcasing original songs via music videos to visualize and bring each character's story to life. In this episode, we're here to introduce you to a theater director who brings the term immersive to a brand new view, literally. She's created some of the coolest offstage plays and acts that bring the audience into the mix and has had over a decade of experience within the field of theater art. Her name is Danielle Rasmussen, and this is The Art of Immersive Theater. From Cincinnati Public Radio, this is The Art Of series. Let's go.
Wasn't that always the challenge between making art and the business of producing art?
Mm-hmm.
If there's always that push and pull. I run into that all the time with my work,
right? Yeah. Yeah,
the inspiration might be there, but sometimes it's like, okay, when you're making art, it's the difference between like the microwave method and the slow cooker method. And sometimes some things, whether you want them to be or not, are like, hi, I'm a slow cooker meal.
Yeah.
And that is just how that's going to go. But then when you have people who are counting on you, and you have deadlines, and you have financial commitments, you don't always have the luxury of waiting for the art to catch up with those deadlines. You have to figure out a way to produce around it or to make that thing happen, because that's where art and the intersection of art and business come in, is that
right.
It's not just art for art's sake when you're trying to put it out there in the world and have it mean something.
Yeah.
So there's always this like push and pull between those two things.
There's that thin line there, yeah.
Yeah. And you need both, actually.
You do.
You need those deadlines to make the art have urgency.
Yeah.
And without the art, there's nothing to sell.
Right? Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like you have to have that push and pull. But sometimes that's where some of the stress as an artist comes in. Because you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I have people buying tickets and I got nothing.
Yeah.
Like we're like that last little bit, that last, you know, leg of the race.
Yeah.
Is just not falling into place. And I've got nothing left in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired. I'm barely sleeping. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it all right now. And I got nothing left. And I know it's not an option.
Right.
Welcome to the life of being an artist.
Welcome to the life of being an artist. Yeah. Like you got to learn how to improvise. And
yeah,
having that level of urgency is super important. You know, I'd say scheduling is usually one of the most like difficult things upon it. But like, yeah, I think when you practice the level of urgency and you apply it to your craft and you practice it, you know,
with no deadlines, you never get anything done. Just sit in your basement thinking about art all day.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Until that moment where you're like, ooh, like that needs to get done like right now. Like we got to do that.
Someone's calling you up going like, hey.
You know,
remember that time when I gave you money to do this thing? Well, that time is now.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah. Ooh.
It's
been a lot going on.
A lot of nothing going on, too.
Yeah. No, that's what it feels like. It feels like feast or famine.
Yeah.
To be an artist is like feast or famine. And it's like you got nothing going on or all of it going on all at one time.
Yeah, that's actually a great way to put it. Because, I mean, there's times where you're literally looking at a blank canvas and you're just like, you know. But then for some reason, sometimes, like, something hits. And it's usually something that's, like, it is, like, causes a sense of turbulence. Where you're like, oh, snap, you know, which is usually, like, the deadline. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like, all of this stuff just starts popping out.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, where have you been at all my life? Like,
seriously.
Where have you been at for the past 3 months?
Or sometimes I'll be working on one project. Like, right now, I'm working on one project. And then this other project that's been slow cooking for literally 20 years is like, hey, I have thoughts now.
Yeah.
I want you to pay attention to me. I'm like, no, I cannot pay attention to you.
Like I'm focused.
Because I have to get this one out the door.
Yeah.
And the other project's like, yeah, but you know, I have I have things to say right now. And my characters are like, hey, so you know how I was like sleeping for 4 years and now I have thoughts.
Like, nah, I have the exact thought and the idea that you've been looking for.
The linchpin that you've been waiting for. Yeah. It's here. And you're like, no.
Yeah, like the time is not right now. Like, and like knowing you when you're like in the midst of working and you see it, like you got to go somewhere and write it down.
I got to write it down or it's gone. It's not going to come back. It's not going to simmer.
Yeah.
It's like you have to honor that inspiration in that moment.
Yeah.
So I've got like a billion journals because when it hits, I never have one with me. Or I have a different one with me. So my notes are in like 14 different journals.
Dude, there's been a time where I've actually been working like literally I'd just be like on the job and like a tune will come in my head where I'm like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
And like literally I'll just be like, but in the midst of like completely working. So like I'll be like, I'll go somewhere and just like record it real quick. Like walk around. Like I'll walk around and you just see me like just talking on the phone. And someone goes, you can see someone going like, is he all right over there?
Dude, I talk to myself all the time. Like all the time. Like I'm working out a thought.
I think that's an artist thing. Though.
I think it's an artist thing. It's also definitely an extrovert thing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an artist thing because I'll work out dialogue when I'm walking. Walking is really good for working out thoughts. Mm-hmm. But also just like processing thoughts. And so much of my stuff is so like, there's so many things that happen. Like there's a lot of different mechanisms. So I'll talk out like, okay, if I do this and then they do that and then it goes this way, you know, I have to talk it out. But I look like maybe I have, you know, a few screws.
That's funny. What would you say? Like, could you give a couple of like of examples of how someone like a creative could organize the way that their thoughts are to elaborate the idea. So for instance, you said like walking, right? Walking and speaking out loud allows you to like elaborate the idea out loud or whatever you're trying to practice on to keep it solid. Like what's another like practice that you could do?
Yeah, I use index cards.
Index cards are good.
I use index cards. I color code. I'm like obsessed with color coding.
Color coding is good.
I like, but there's no rhyme or reason. I just like pretty colors. Just like pretty colors.
That's a Danielle thing is what you're saying.
That's very much a Danielle thing. I just like pretty colors. So I'll use index cards or I'll use post-it notes. But especially when I'm working on an idea, I'll use index cards and I'll kind of categorize them in columns of like, kind of like TV writing. But I use that sometimes. I'll use different colors for this is a movement component or because my stuff is so multidisciplinary, I am constantly not just thinking about dialogue, but I'm thinking about movement. I'm thinking about music. I'm thinking about random things that I'm incorporating into that piece.
Right.
So I'll color code based off of like, this color is everything dance oriented and this color is everything music oriented and this color is this character and this color is that character.
I see. Cause then like where your mind is establishing, what is being, how it's being represented.
Yeah.
It's like, if it's pink, then like this is,
this is the
dialogue here, obviously.
Yeah. And I can see it visually cause I'm so visual.
Yeah.
I'm a writer in that I'm a storyteller, but I'm not a writer in that I can just put it on the page and be able to see how it looks like, because all of my stuff is three dimensional, four dimensional, seven dimensional, whatever. I have to see it. So whether I'm putting it in index cards and I can then create pattern, or I'm actually taking pictures and creating boards. So because all of my stuff is typically site specific, I'll get a ground plan from the venue that we're working with and we'll blow it up. So if you go to like Kinko's or Staples, you can do it like a, you use blueprint and it's cheaper and it's just black and white and you blow it up like in a 2x3 or 3x6 piece of paper. And then we plot everything out. And I tell you, I'm not kidding when we always joke that this is our bank heist planning because it's literally
like a blueprint.
Well, they give you the ground plan and then you just print it like it's a blueprint. So it's cheaper than, you don't need color, but you're taking the ground plan of the venue and you're blowing it up to like poster size. So that way we can plot out. Like, okay, this piece is happening here. This scene is here. The actors move this way. And I swear to you, it looks like we're planning a bank heist.
Like you're planning a bank heist.
Every time. I call it my bank heist.
That's actually not a bad like name for it. First off, I'm like real big into like bank heist, like movies and TV series. Like that is like.
I'm not actually planning any bank heists.
Yeah, like let's establish that real quick.
Just gotta put that out there.
She's very adventurous, right? And she very much likes to take chances, but the bank heist thing is not a
not
thing.
That one. Not yeah, that one. Not that
one. She likes to be inspired by watching shows, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's like it makes me think of like the old timey bank heist.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the westerns. We're gonna plan a bank heist, and nobody will recognize me with my bandana on my face.
And what did you call the thing again? What is it?
So you get a blueprint or a ground plan. Sorry, ground plan.
Yeah.
So each venue has a ground plan. And so when I'm working with a partner, I get a ground plan from them and we blow it up. And then that's how I use post-it notes and color coding colors. And so we plot out what the audience experience is going to be and how they're going to travel from one place to the next. Mm-hmm. And then we use that to plan, okay, what scenic items and elements are in each place, because we have to plan our load in and load outs to the T. Like that is choreographed, because often with our venues, we're loading in and loading out on the same day of a performance. And then the next time we come to perform there, we're loading in and out again. So everything has to be thought through.
Right.
Every scenic element, every prop, how they store, how they get loaded in. When you have a small crew and a limited one venue, we had 90 minutes to load in before the show.
Right.
It was intense. I'm not gonna.
I bet it was.
It was very, very intense.
Yeah.
What I realized being in the Midwest, on the border of going into the East Coast, is, our cities can't support or sustain huge projects like that because we don't have enough people coming through. Also, those projects are so expensive. So a lot of my exploration has been about sustainability. And scaling it to where it still feels like a great experience, but it's affordable for someone who lives in the Midwest, for someone who lives in a not major city.
Right.
Because there is a threshold. There's a threshold of what people can and will pay for entertainment and experiences.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the level of entertainment that happens here compared to New York is completely different. It's definitely like an A and Z thing.
It's completely different. And what people are looking for in their experiences is different.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, that is. But I think your realm though has a huge area of room to expand.
Yeah.
Right? Like but I think it's smart that knowing that you're approaching it from a sustainable nature allows you to be a little bit more conscientious of where you're presenting your tours of your immersive experience.
Well,
but
New York is different. New York is a very different beast to produce in and to market in. But what I'm really interested, I think, as a creator is collaboration. And so what I want to make with partners that are really invested. I don't want to just rent a venue and try to self-produce. Mm-hmm. What I believe in is creating content for partners who have an audience base or membership base, and they don't have an internal content arm, and they're constantly looking for ways to engage with different age demographics, different needs in their community, and also they're changing demographics of who their membership base has been. I really like working with institutions. I've spent my career working with artistic institutions, primarily regional theater. And now I'm really enjoying, and I have been enjoying, working with cultural institutions that are different. And some of those things that are different are the challenges that you have to work through, because they're not used to having performance-based content coming into their venue. So there's some learning curves. But when you learn together, I think it makes for something really special, and it matters. It matters to them because, you know, they're putting stuff on the line too.
Right.
And it matters to the community that they're serving, because I care very much about being service oriented. I'm very service driven as a human. So for me, it's not about trying to commercialize my work. It's trying to make the work more accessible,
right,
in general to people, right, who don't think they like theater. They don't even know what theater is half the time, or they don't know what immersive theater is, but they know that they would love to go to a tea party with their five-year-old granddaughter,
right,
or their tweenage kid that they can't find anything that they'll enjoy doing together anymore. That's what excites me as a creator and as a producer. And then working with partners who are just as invested, mm-hmm, is what makes the work worth it to me.
Yeah. You know, I do want to make sure that we do touch on this. You have a play coming up.
I do.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So currently right now, I'm in the process of developing the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. And our first partner that we're doing this show with is here in Cincinnati, and that's the Taft Museum of Art. And when you talk about really wonderful collaborative relationships, the Taft Museum of Art has been an incredible partner, and we're learning some things together. We're really figuring out, you know, this is my company's first production. I've, you know, been directing and developing immersive productions for a decade now, right, for other companies. And so this is my first one on my own, under my own banner, which is very exciting. And our whole model is working with cultural institutions. So once we get this show up with the Taft Museum of Art, then I'll start working with partners in cities 2 to 6 hours outside of Cincinnati. But in Cincinnati, the Taft Museum of Art is our home base for this particular production. And I remember several years ago coming to the Taft Museum of Art for an event or something with Arts Wave, and walking in through this building. And I love buildings. I love historic buildings. I love venues that are where a home or have something unique to them. There's a castle in Loveland that I've stalked.
I know exactly.
You know what I'm talking about? The Loveland Castle.
Yeah.
I've stalked that castle many a time. I've had many conversations with the knights, like, but if a girl wanted to like make a play here, how would one do that? And they're like, you need to talk to Sir Tom. And I'm like, okay, but like, how does a girl talk to Sir Tom? And they're like, there's an email, and Sir Tom never emailed me back. So Sir Tom, if you're hearing this, like, I want to come hang out. No, so like there's these special places that when I go there, I just want to have a dialogue with these venues. And the Taft Museum of Art is one of those places that I have wanted to create there for a really, really long time.
Because you see the vision. You see a vision at these venues.
Okay, so you know movies where sometimes the character is having like a flashback, but they're in the current time, but that you can see their younger self running through the hall, or their child running through the hall.
Yeah.
That's what it's like for me. When I walk into a venue, I can see things.
I can see all the things.
I can see the ghost of what could happen, and the story that could be told there. And sometimes it's multiple stories. Like what we're making at the Taft right now is different than what I originally was envisioning in the inside of the house. We're out in the grounds on this one, which I'm very excited about. And sometimes it starts with an idea of a story, and then you're just waiting for the right partner. So I knew a long time ago that I wanted to make something at the Taft Museum of Art. And recently, for many years, I've wanted to do something Alice in Wonderland based, but in a more recent year, 2 years, I'd been having this idea of like doing a tea party that's Mad Hatter themed, and really trying to figure out what that would look like. So when we actually started talking last summer, and they were talking about how they already have these teas, because I'll start with the venue and say, if I'm creating a show with a venue, we start with, what are your goals? What are some of your initiatives? What are some of your projects that you would really like to do deeper, or bring in different demographics to? And we'll start there. We'll start with, who are you? What are your goals?
Right, right.
And then I'll start crafting from there. So they already have these really awesome teas, and they work with Churchill's Teas, which is amazing. So good.
Oh, yeah, I do. Because we tried some of them.
Yeah. It was so good. So good.
Yeah.
And so they already have these tea services, but it has a very specific demographic that comes to them. And then they also are trying to bring, they were interested in bringing more attention to their cafe, which is super bomb. And you can like eat there every day, and they have a brunch on the weekend. So this is a shout out for the Taft Museum of Arts Cafe. It's so good.
I got to try that out.
No, it's really good. And they have the best gluten-free bread.
Hmm.
Yeah. really good.
I remember him. I remember the, I think it was Scott who stated that the last time, too. That was,
Yeah. I get a turkey sandwich. Although this time I got a BLT because I don't get to have sandwiches at restaurants very often.
It was great, wasn't it?
It was like the best thing that happened to me that day. I'm like, not going to lie. So when I was talking to them, then it started to gel for me. Like, oh, this idea that was in the back burner of my mind was the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. Actually works really well because they have the internal infrastructure. Mm-hmm. They have an in-house chef, Jason. He's amazing, and he's designing all this like really custom stuff. Scott, who is my partner, he is the director of visitor experience, also has these visions of like how he wants the food activations and the drink activations to go. Mm. So it is a collaboration. It's not just me like bringing in the show. It's that they're meeting me creatively, and it's so rewarding and so exciting to have like that creative collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah.
In our different areas of expertise and skill.
Yeah. No, the collaboration aspect to art in general is usually what allows it to flourish.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't just have one rose inside of the vase. You know, you need a couple more in order for it to actually look like
A bouquet,
yeah, you know,
and different flowers
with a beautiful vase. You know, mm-hmm. what I mean, it looks like it looks full.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what makes collaboration so important.
Yeah, I went through theater school. I went to college for theater, and mm-hmm. I got my degrees in theater. And you have to take theater history a lot when you're doing your undergrad. And then I transferred schools, and every time I transferred schools, they made me take theater history again because they'd be like, Oh yeah. I took it like 4 or 5 times. It was kind of ridiculous because they'd be like, oh, well, where you were, it was like an upper division. Here it's a lower division. So you have to take it again. But I'm going to tell you a story, and you're going to see why. Like at the time I was like, this is stupid.
But then at one point it made sense.
So going through theater history so many times, like really reinforced for me,
mm-hmm.
the longstanding tradition of being a theatrical storyteller or an mm-hmm. artistic storyteller, it has changed. So theater is not a new art form. It is millennia old.
Oh,
music,
of course.
Millennia
of
old.
Of course.
Visual art. Millennia,
right.
Like it's like millennia upon millennia, right?
Yeah.
So when we think about that, and we think about, oh, but how theater was experienced in the Dark Ages, where people were literally driving around in wagons,
right?
Versus how it's told now, when you look at storytelling, dramatic, theatrical storytelling throughout the ages, it always met the need of the community that it was serving at the time. So when it was in wagons driving around, it was because the populations were more nomadic.
Mm.
It was because they were smaller settlements with disparate, with long distances between them, right? So,
right.
And also how artists were treated at the time. When you cut to now, what we think of as traditional theater now is actually since the 50s or 60s when regional theater became a thing, and that was a revolutionary concept to have highly professional Broadway level shows in your city,
right,
so that you could engage with art on a regular basis and
right.
have a home life and a family life.
Yeah.
Like all of these things that are now our mainstays were revolutionary at the time that they really came into existence, and they came into existence to meet a need. And I believe that more immersive and interactive engagement with art is meeting the need. And it'll change in 5 years what that looks like. It'll change in 10 years what that looks like.
Right.
But I think that the time that we are in now, because technology is so prevalent, I believe that we are actually hungry for interpersonal interaction. And more so, we are hungry to be an active part of our own story. Right? So traditional theater, what we call traditional theater, where you sit in a seat and you receive, it is a passive exchange between the artists and the audience. What immersive and interactive does is it makes the audience an active and important element in that story experience. And I think we all want to be an active hero in our own stories.
Yeah, they become a part of the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you get to interact with your friends and your family in a social way. So if I have to choose my how I'm going to spend my entertainment money, where I want to hang out with my friends, I want to get something to drink, I want to eat, and I want something that entertains me, that's four things that I want, and I have this much money in my entertainment budget, I'm going to prioritize where I can get the most out of that money. Mm-hmm. So that might be going to like a karaoke night where it's at a bar where we can eat and drink and hang out and sing.
Right?
Yeah. I'm not going to spend $100 per ticket to go see a great show, even if it is a great show, because now I don't have any money for the social components.
Right?
So, and that's some demographics. There are those who are still like, yep, nope, that's how I want to experience art. And that's awesome. That exists.
Right.
That exists for people who want to experience art in that way.
Yeah.
What I'm working on and why I'm so passionate about moving the immersive art form forward is it's not readily available. It's not. And for those who need that experience, or they're looking for a more socially engaged way to incorporate art into their hangout time with their friends and family, that's what I think we need now that's not readily available.
I think the beautiful thing is that I think Cincinnati, I know the world needs immersive creation, right? With immersive theater being the forefront of it. But I think Cincinnati really needs this because it allows that accessibility for the creatives like myself and others that do something completely different to tap into a realm and to be able to visit and walk into a space to allow them to capture and like inhale that creativity and be like, wow, like this thing, like this space exists here in our own city.
I think that,
and to watch it expand too.
When you open your mind up to working in a different way or seeing the world through a different lens, it makes you better at what you do. I mean, I think just the work you and I have done together and trying to understand each other's art forms has made us both better.
Just
watching you blossom as a narrative storyteller in your own art form has been so exciting to see.
Thank you.
And what you have brought to my world of understanding music and understanding how music is created and how to better incorporate it, not just as something that is background music that incorporate like that adds to a feeling, but how that music can add to the story that we're telling and be intentional in that story is making my work better. And I think making the work more accessible to people who speak music first rather than theater first. And I think what my influence on you is making people who speak storytelling, more narrative storytelling, understand your work better.
Yep.
It's been fun to watch people enjoy Edge of Town and to enjoy the things that you're bringing to life through this series. We make each other better, Deuce.
We do. I'm glad that we shot the music video for your episode because that was cool.
Was
and I think that was a great way to be able to capture your play, which you'll be having at the Tap Museum.
Yeah. And that was hard figuring out how do you embody immersive theater in video, in a music video form, because it's so expansive.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun. I'm excited to see how that came out. But for me, I think the greatest gift is
this is the advice part that you're probably going to give.
I'm trying. I think for me as a creative, if there was anything that I was going to pass on to younger creatives, is when you ask questions, you will get answers that lead to more questions, that lead to more answers, that lead to more questions. This is called creative inquiry. Don't be afraid of the inquiry, because the inquiry is what's going to take you places. It's what's going to take your art form deeper. It's what's going to introduce you to people that you didn't know you were going to meet along the way that makes your art better. Mm-hmm. For me, I think the process, the art is the inquiry, and you can't be afraid of that. The other thing I will tell you is you cannot be afraid to fail. I say fail forward, right? Like, I think that was a Steve Jobs phrase or something.
Yeah, that is a Steve Jobs phrase.
Yeah, like fail forward, fail forward. For me, I tend to throw spaghetti against a wall to see what sticks sometimes, and not be afraid of that not all of it will stick, because the things that was supposed to stick will stick.
Yeah.
When you are trying to marry ideas in a different way, when you are bold enough to say, well, what if we did this? Mm. What if we took that and turned it on its head? There will be a point when there's no longer a blueprint for you to follow. There will be a point when there's no advice that anyone can give you because no one has explored that area before. So you just have to be, you have to be bold, and you can't be afraid to be wrong, because you don't know that you're going to be wrong. You can't know, you don't know what you don't know. Mm. And you can't know what you don't know until you try something. Mm-hmm. And the act of trying something, and you go, oh, that's a fun fact. Well, now you can work to solve for X.
Right.
Because now you have some fun facts to play
with. Failing forward.
But yeah, you got to fail forward. You can't be afraid to fail forward.
Yeah.
I'm where I am today because I took big swings.
You want big rewards?
You got to take big risks.
Yeah.
I can't remember what movie. I feel like that was a movie quote. And I feel like the minute that I heard that line, that was like, that embodies all of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to redefine success, right? So I think that the last big piece of advice I have is you have to redefine success.
Yep, redefining your success. And the bigger the reward, the bigger the risk. Yeah. Yep, is really that how that's summed up.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I love that. I think that that's a great way to end the podcast. And what is the name of your company called?
So we are Merry Band Entertainment, and you can catch us at www.themerryband.com.
Okay. And that's MERRYBAND.
Merry, like Robin Hood and
like
his Merry Men.
Merry Had a Little Lamb.
But we are Merry Band of Wackos. Yeah. So
Merry Band of Wackos.
We're Merry Band of Wackos, just making art.
Yeah.
Okay. And loving the life that we're creating while we make this art together. I think that's our whole ethos, is we want to love what we do, and we are the makers of magic and the bringers of joy.
Well, we will make sure, the people of Cincinnati will make sure that we tap into the world of Merry Band, and we're going to make sure that we keep up to date on what you have going on.
Thank you.
So
I'm excited to share it with you. And the Taft Museum of Art and Merry Band Entertainment are so excited to welcome you to the Mad Hatter's Tea Party and any other collaborations we may be fortunate to have.
Yeah, no, it'll be amazing. And again, yeah, I think the city is in good hands when it comes to the immersive experience. I think that's always been the centuries, like, current wave. You know, I think people have just been trying to figure out how to really sew it together, you know, to make it a thing. So yeah, we're excited. I'm excited. I'm excited for the experience of immersive theater. I think we gave enough info and experience on what the word of immersive theater is. Yeah. So thank you, Danielle. And do you want to go ahead and just let them know who you are as an exit?
Yeah. So I'm Danielle Rasmussen. I am an immersive theater director and producer, and I am the chief artistic officer of Merry Band Entertainment.
And this is the Art of Series, the Art of Immersive Theater, with your boy Deuces. Peace.
Cause I know I dream big. Ooh. I'm reaching what is far and distant. Oh, look up, because the world keeps spinning around and around and around we go. Hey Alice, we're only just getting started. Welcome to the last tea party. Hey Alice, come and take a seat. Come and take a seat. Say, man.
road, falling down a rabbit hole, landed on a mound of gold, the dreams all inside her head. Okay, the last I recall, and you can hear it one day, a greeting from my hat with a little feng shui, and really some say the past is revealing for something new, cause if you feel it, then open up your eyes if you can see it, the weather's really yours if you believe it. This tea might spill and overfill with life and a brand new thrill of innovation. So here's a little written invitation. You gotta play this all the situation. Trying to climb the heights, it's such a gamble these days, but such is life. You see, a mad tea party isn't mad without our guests. In the past there's a flow and the future is the test. I'm glad to be your host and the honor is mine. But hey Alice, we should make a toast this time.
Hey Alice, we're only just getting started. Welcome to the last tea party. Come and take a seat. Hey Alice, you know you could be anything you dream, anything you see. Hey Alice, come and take a seat. Hey Alice, na 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 na
Thank you for listening to The Art of Immersive Theater featuring Danya Rasmussen. This series was created by Deuces Cunningham, directed by Deuces Cunningham and Simeon Collins, executive produced by Cincinnati Public Radio, VP of Content at Cincinnati Public Radio, Janelle Walton, produced by Deuces Cunningham, also produced by Simeon Collins, director of photography, Solo Films, podcast edited by Deuces Cunningham. Visuals edited by Simeon Collins, Maya Earl, and Solo Films. And music produced and directed by Deuces Cunningham. From Cincinnati Public Radio, this is the Art of Series.